This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg, settling on building even more quickly than expected to move the embassy to Jerusalem while using cuts to food and education aid to further starve Palestinian rights.
Those are Arab members of the Israeli Knesset holding up signs and heckling the U.S. Vice President Mike Pence. And just look how security responded on them in seconds, escorting them out. As Derek Stoffel tells us, Pence's visit to the country appears to have only created deeper divisions.
It's the kind of pomp and ceremony usually reserved for visiting heads of state. But all this was for Vice President Mike Pence. A thank you from Israel after Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital last month. But not everyone rolled out the welcome mat. The man in the gray jacket is Jamal Zelhelka, one of the Arab-Israeli lawmakers who protested the Vice President's speech.
Mr. Pence is persona non grata here in the region because he came here to support the right wing and to work against peace, not for peace.
With the protesters kicked out, the speech went on.
It is deeply humbling for me to stand before this vibrant democracy.
Pence then turned to the decision that has infuriated Palestinians and led to violent protests in Gaza and the West Bank. And he had a surprise.
That United States embassy will open before the end of next year.
That time frame, moving the embassy in under 2 years, was unexpected. Some American officials said last month it could take 3, even 4 years for that to happen. This Toronto-born member of Israel's parliament says now it's time for Canada to follow the U.S. lead.
I think it is a just step and the right step, and I would love to see Canada move its embassy as well.
Prime Minister Trudeau said last month that Canada will keep its diplomatic mission in Tel Aviv. Donald Trump has his own peace plan in the works, something he calls the ultimate deal. But the Palestinians aren't interested in talking. In fact, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas snubbed the vice president by traveling to Brussels, where he urged European leaders to recognize a Palestinian state. Derek Stoffel, CBC News, Jerusalem.
There is no doubt for Israel, a Donald Trump presidency is as friendly as it gets. That is exactly what Israel wanted to hear. Today, Benjamin Netanyahu said the Trump administration is on the right side of history.
And now Trump stomps on Palestinians. Benjamin Netanyahu danced a jig during Vice President Mike Pence's 4-day trip to the Mideast. Palestinians were still fuming over the Trump administration's decision to recognize the city as Israel's capital, which Pence trumpeted. For analysis of this latest development, Ken Nash and I turn to Richard Falk, Professor Emeritus of International Law and Practice at Princeton University, the former United Nations Human Rights Rapporteur in the occupied territories, and the author or co-author of more than 20 books, including Chaos and Counter-Revolution After the Arab Spring. For analysis, Richard Falk. And it's good to have you back for the second part of our conversation, and it's precipitous that we are on the eve of really Mr. Pence's visit to the Mideast. And maybe we should just pick up with one of the things that stimulated a great deal of consternation there, which goes back to why declaring Jerusalem the capital of Israel is so controversial, and they're declaring that they're going to retrofit a building that is right near, it sits really near the Green Line in West Jerusalem, on the de facto border of Israel before the 1967 war. So they're about to expedite its opening. Why does this matter so much? And thank you, of course, for joining us.
Well, thank you, Mimi, for having me back so soon, and I'm glad to be with you. I think that it should have been obvious from the overwhelming vote in the UN General Assembly that repudiated Trump's initiative of recognizing Jerusalem as the Israeli capital, that this was a rupture in what the international community had agreed was a ultra-sensitive issue that should be resolved by diplomacy involving the Palestinians as well as the Israelis. And this American effort to basically repudiate the consensus was itself rejected in very unconditional language that was supported even by America's closest international allies like France and the United Kingdom and Japan, among others, and only supported by the U.S. decision was only supported by Israel, the U.S., a few small Pacific Island countries very vulnerable to American influence, and a couple of very suspect Central American countries that have no real interest in the issue other than appeasing Washington. So this issue, this idea that U.S. geopolitical muscle can overwhelm international law, overwhelm international political consensus, and defy the will of the United Nations is, I think, significant beyond the narrow concern that the Islamic world has that they will be precluded from equal access to the third of their three sacred sites, Mecca being the most sacred of these sites, but all three of them are considered sacred to the Muslim religion.
The other thing that I wonder what you think Pence's trip there means. It's certainly the numbers of Arabs were who protested within the Knesset when he spoke about the expedited opening of the embassy in Jerusalem by the U.S., which is expected in early 2019, were thrown out. The Mahmoud Abbas has protested rigorously, and it would appear that whatever there were of peace talks are at a standstill at best, or dead in the water, or perhaps they were dead in the water before that. But your thoughts on that?
I think that your final speculations about the status of these negotiations is accurate. There certainly was an attempt to make it seem as though the resumption of negotiations was a live possibility, and I think the international community went along with this because it didn't want to appear to give up on finding a political solution to the long struggle. But I think many of us, including myself, felt that the settlement process had gone so far and the Israeli attempt to make Jerusalem into a essentially Jewish city had proceeded so far that it was not really politically credible that there could be a two-state a solution that involved treating the Palestinian people as entitled to fulfill their right of self-determination. And any purported solution that doesn't include the right of self-determination, even if swallowed temporarily by a weak Palestinian authority leadership, will not endure and will not. It will be a fake peace process And so it's very important to recognize that what Pence's visit symbolizes is finally acknowledging throwing the Palestinians under the bus. They were always under the bus, but now it's a matter of overt policy and the pretension that the U.S. was interested in sponsoring diplomacy, not in reinforcing Israeli Netanyahu unilateralism. That impression no longer can be given any kind of credibility except by the most unconditional Zionist zealots.
Well, it seems as if the attacks on the Palestinian population in the region is just increasing exponentially. Not only has the Likud party floated the idea of annexing the settlements on the West Bank, but the U.S. government now is cutting back on money to the U.N. refugee agencies.
Yes,
what
I think
what do you make
that,
of all of this? I mean, I can't think of what else could be done to oppress the Palestinians at this point.
Yes, I think it's important to add that to the issues we've been talking about, because it does seem to follow from the effort of some important personalities, both in the United States and in Israel, that are trying to create the impression that the Palestinian struggle has been defeated and that what is now to be achieved is the acceptance of that defeat by putting enough pressure on the Palestinian people that they will, in effect, surrender their struggle for a national, a nation of their own. And I think what is at stake here is this effort to squeeze the Palestinians even harder than they have been squeezed in the hope of achieving this unilaterally constructed solution that is the real quote-unquote peace plan of the Trump administration.
Now, Ken, at the towards the end of his question, had mentioned the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, and Trump had announced that he would freeze $65 million in funding to the UN Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees. And in addition to that, if that wasn't enough, when the Palestinians responded back that food and education is not a bargaining chip for U.S., for the U.S., but an international obligation, he then came back even stronger and said that he would be freezing an additional $45 million in funding to the UN agency, bringing the total that could be withheld from it to potentially $110 million, which the UN agency said is the most dramatic financial crisis, if that does occur, in its 70-year history. Your thoughts on that, Professor Falk?
Well, that's just an escalation of this policy of squeezing the Palestinians at the behest of the Netanyahu government. Netanyahu has long pushed the idea that UNRWA should be, eliminated from the scene as the protector of minimal humanitarian needs that the occupied people, refugees, have. They're already living at a lamentably low standard. So this additional squeezing is really something that should be viewed in the context of a crime against humanity. I mean, you can't push a people that's already occupied, is already living for years under the constraints of a refugee regime, into a situation where their minimal human needs of food and medicine and shelter are being threatened in this way. it's not only irresponsible, I would view it as ethically depraved and something that should be viewed as an international crime.
Abbas is in Europe right now, in Brussels, trying to speak to the European Union to recognize a Palestinian state or advocate for that. What kind of influence does the European Union have versus the U.S.?
Well, it's one of these gray sectors that is something that's evolving over time. On this issue, because the U.S. has discredited itself as the third-party convener of whatever negotiations occur, there is a kind of diplomatic vacuum that could be filled by the European Union and would be, I think, welcomed by the Palestinians, but bitterly opposed by Israel. Israel doesn't want and doesn't feel the need for any kind of meaningful diplomacy to take place. And for that, to further that kind of priority, it's useful for Tel Aviv to have a government in Washington that will make life so difficult for the Palestinians and so humiliating for them that they won't accept an initiative for negotiations, which would be meaningless anyway for the reasons I earlier stated, that the idea of a separate Palestinian state that could satisfy the Palestinian right of self-determination is no longer a viable option because the situation on the ground has gone so far that any Israeli government that really tried to operationalize a two-state mantra would be faced by a civil war within its own boundaries.
One of the things that there's building consensus on and protest is around the imprisonment of youth, Palestinian youth, and there's a campaign now around the incarceration, the imprisonment of Ahmed Tamimi, who's a 16-year-old whose family had been, as activists, targeted, and she is purported to have slapped a soldier after her cousin was actually shot in the face by the Israeli Defense Force soldiers. I wonder if you can talk about the issue of the imprisonment of children there, which is something I know that you've spent a great deal of time in study and thought about.
Yes. I mean, again, I would put it in the context of what we were just talking about, that this is a further intensification of the policies of the occupation that have gone on since 1967. And what the new political atmosphere is one where they are trying to squeeze the Palestinian people in such a way that they feel despair and are inclined to give up their struggle for a national homeland and a state of their own. And the children have long been recognized by Israel's political leaders as a way of expressing Israeli dominance over the situation. And the helplessness of children is one way of signifying to themselves and to the Palestinians that they are the overlords and the Palestinians are the helpless victims. This is, in the case of Tamimi, she is being held in a detention facility within Israel, pre-67 Israel, which itself is a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention that's supposed to govern belligerent occupation and has the practical effect of cutting children, in this case this young woman, off from her family, who are never given the, or rarely given, permission to visit children being held in these ways. And Palestinian children have been eloquent in writing their stories that have been published in anthologies and elsewhere to inform themselves and their people of the degree to which they feel engaged in the struggle for their own dignity and the dignity of their families, but also as prime victims of a very cruel occupation. They tend to be arrested in the middle of the night, family pushed aside in a very abrupt, sometimes violent way, and a disproportionate show of force is accompanies these arrests. So it's a situation that I would describe as one of terrorizing young people who are living in any event under the harsh conditions of prolonged occupation.
And we have 2 minutes left. Give me something constructive, something hopeful. Is it the BDS, the boycott, divestment movement that is where we should be placing our energies for Palestinian self-determination?
Well, I think the international diplomacy has shown itself to not be a path to a real peace. Civil society activism was essential in ending apartheid racism in South Africa. There is that potential mobilization that is accelerating in relation to the Palestinian Solidarity Movement. And I think the other source of hopefulness is that the bluntness of the Trump approach and its failure to even pretend to work toward a real peace has lifted the scales from our eyes. We now, there's no excuse for not having eyes wide open as to either Israeli intentions and evident plans to be as expansionist as they want to be, and the hopelessness of a Palestinian effort to achieve a nonviolent solution that is sensitive to their fundamental rights.
Richard Falk, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. You shed such important light, and you give us a sense of direction to go in to support our brother and sister Palestinians for self-determination. And we have been speaking with Richard Falk, Professor Emeritus of International Law and Practice at Princeton University and the former United Nations Human Rights Rapporteur in the occupied territories. And we're going to continue this conversation, one of the critical areas of the world and issues to for freedom-loving people to get on board with. It's been, again, a pleasure.
Thank you, Mimi. It's always my pleasure to be with you.
Israel has stepped up measures against the international movement of boycott, divestment, and sanctions known as the BDS. The measures come as the BDS has gained worldwide support in the past years in its efforts to help bring an end to Israel's suppression of Palestinians. Tel Aviv says the latest measures include a list of 19 organizations whose members will be barred from entering Israel. The list is currently being prepared and is set to be finalized by March. Strategists who overlook the BDS activities say Israel is likely to take other measures as well as step up fight against the movement.
Their efforts to counter BDS also include pressuring various governments in the West to outlaw the boycott of Israel, at the very least the settlements in the occupied territories, by companies. Ultimately, of course, they hope to equate boycotting Israel with anti-Semitism, thus using anti-Semitism as a weapon for the Zionist cause.
Palestinian activists have slammed the Israeli move, saying that it will backfire.
There is a saying that goes, a blow that doesn't kill me will make me stronger. Every time Israel tries to go after BDS activists around the world, the natural reaction is increased support for the movement.
The BDS started its work in 2005. It seeks to end Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands and dismantle its settlements, which are illegal under international law. The movement also calls for the rights of Palestinian refugees to be upheld. The BDS is scoring more victories across the world with increasing support amongst the peoples. This is seen as a source of hope for Palestinians here who are aligning behind the movement despite the Israeli threats. Fatma Abdul Karim, Press TV, Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.